Oh, sure. Beyond psychology. Responses to disciples' questions. Given in Punta del Este, Uruguay. Discourse number 36.
Beloved Bhagwan, when you speak about the many states on the way to enlightenment, I am not even able to see where I am on the way. I always think I must be thousands of lifetimes away from the highest state. On the other hand, you are saying that it can happen now and here for all of us. I cannot imagine that a quick change can be possible from a state of unawareness like my own to a state of total consciousness. In my reality, I often see myself as an idiot, very stupid. I do have a taste of understanding, especially through your so-called contradictions, but this understanding creates in me even more absurdities. For example, the highest freedom is in the highest slavery. I'm totally confused, and at the same time, I am not. Even when I say that I don't believe in the unexpected happening here and now, I don't believe in my believing, because it might be just the tricky mind which has carried the memory of your saying that enlightenment is the only thing that cannot be desired. So I'm here just enjoying, grateful for your being and your words. To be one of so many people in the world, to be allowed to sit by the feet of the most beautiful man in the world, gives me the insight that existence takes so much care of me that I cannot really be an idiot. At least I must be a blessed fool. Please help me to know a little bit who I am.
A man asleep. Can dream himself anywhere in the universe. From that point, to be awake will look thousands of life away. But it is a dream. As far as the real sleep is concerned, awakening is just close by. Any moment you can wake up. Any situation can make you awake. And the master's work is to create devices in which you can become awake. Sometimes very small things, just throwing cold water in your eyes, will make you awake. And asleep you were so far away. But when you wake up, then you will see that it was a dream that created the distance. Dreaming is the distance. Of course, for dreaming, sleep is necessary. But the moment you are awake, sleep disappears, and with it the whole world of dreams too. The truth is that awakening is the nearest reality to you. Just by the side of you. It is not far away. Hence it cannot be made a goal. All goals are dreaming. All achievements are dreaming. Awakening cannot be a goal because the man who is asleep cannot even think of what awakening can be. He cannot make in his sleep a goal of enlightenment. It is impossible. Or whatever he makes will be totally different from the reality of enlightenment. Enlightenment is part of your waking consciousness. In the East, we have divided four layers of consciousness. First, that we know is called so-called wakefulness. It is not really wakeful. Because just underneath it, dreams are floating. Close your eyes and you will have a daydream. Close your eyes and you will immediately see imagination takes over and you are starting going away from this moment, from here. In reality nowhere, but in your mind you can go anywhere. So the first state is called so-called waking state. The second state is called the sleep. We are aware of these. The third is called dreaming state. Because sleep can be without dreaming. Then it has a different quality. It is very peaceful, very silent, dark and deep. Very rejuvenating. So sleep is the second stage below the so-called waking stage, and then comes the third stage, dreaming. Most of the time in your sleep you are dreaming. If you sleep 8 hours, then 6 hours you are dreaming. Just here and there, like small islands, you are asleep. Otherwise, it is continuous dreaming. You don't remember it. That's why people think this seems too much. 6 hours of dreaming and only 2 hours of sleep. You remember only the last dreams when you are waking up. Because with your waking up, your memory starts functioning. So it catches only the tail end of your dream world. You don't remember all the dreams, but only the dreams that happen just before you are waking up. The morning dreams. It was in the East always understood that these 6 hours of dreaming are as essential as those 2 hours of silent sleep. But in the West, only for the first time within 10 years, new researches have proved the Eastern insight totally right. In fact, the new findings say that dreaming is even more essential than the sleep. Because in dreaming you are throwing out the rubbish of your mind. The whole day the mind is collecting all kinds of words, all kinds of desires, ambitions, too much dust. It has to be thrown out. And in the day, you don't have any time to throw it up. You are gathering more and more. In the night when you are asleep, the mind has a chance to clean itself up. Dreaming is a kind of spring cleaning. But it is everyday business. Again you will collect, again you will dream, again you will collect. These are the known states to us. The fourth is not named in the East, but is simply called the fourth. Turiya. It is a number. It is not a word. No name is given to it so that you cannot interpret it. Your mind cannot play with it and deceive you. What the mind can do, listening just the number four, the mind simply feels paralyzed. Give any name with meaning, then mind has a way. Meaning is its way, but number four has no meaning. The fourth state is the real awakening. The fourth state has to be understood in reference to other three states. It has something similar to the first, the so-called waking state. The so-called waking state is very thin. Almost negligible. But it has some quality. The fourth consists only of that quality. It is pure awakening. You are fully awake. It is also having some similarity with the second stage, the sleep. Sleep has silence, depth, peacefulness, relaxation, but in a very small measure. Just that much that is needed for day-to-day affair. But the fourth has its totality. Total relaxation, total silence. Abysmal depth. It has also some quality of the dream. The dream takes you far away from yourself. You may go to the moon in the dream. You may go to some star in the dream. Although you remain here in your bed, in reality you don't go anywhere. But in imagination, and as far as while you are dreaming, it looks absolutely real. You cannot think in a dream that it is a dream. If you can think in a dream that it is a dream, the dream will be broken. You are awake. And you cannot catch hold of the dream again. The Sufi story about Mulla Nasruddin is that one night he dreamt that one angel is giving him some money. Because you are so virtuous, so wise, God has sent some reward for you. But as the mind is, he gives him 10 rupees and Mullah says, this is not a reward. Don't insult me. And slowly, slowly he brings the angel up to 99. But Mullah is stubborn. He said, I will take 100 or I will not take anything. What a miserly approach it is, and from God. And you represent God, and you cannot make it 100. He shouted so loudly that either 100 or no, that he woke him up. He looked all around, there was nobody. Just he was sleeping in his bed. He said, my God, I lost 99 rupees unnecessarily. Just being stubborn for 1 rupee more. He closed his eyes, tried hard, please come back wherever you are. 99 is okay. Even 98 will do. 97 is also right. Anything will do. You just come back. Where are you? He came back to 1 rupee, that I will take only 1 rupee. Anything from God is great. I was foolish to call God a miser. In fact, I was greedy. Forgive me and give me just 1 rupee. But the man was not there. You cannot catch hold of the same dream again. Once you are awakened, there is no way to catch hold of the same dream. Dream takes you away from yourself. That's its basic quality. And perhaps that's why it cleanses you and helps you a certain relaxation, you forget your worries. For a few moments at least you can be in paradise. You can be in a situation you want always to be. The fourth stage also has something similar, but just similar. It also takes you away from yourself, but forever. You cannot come back to yourself. In the dream, you cannot come back to the same dream. In the fourth stage, you cannot come back to the same self. It takes you really so far away that you can be the whole universe. That's what the Eastern mystics have said, Aham Brahmasmi. I have become the whole. But you have to lose the self. You cannot come back to it. This fourth stage has been given different names. This is the most mathematical name, the fourth. It has been given by Patanjali, who is a very scientific and mathematical mystic. His treatise has remained for thousands of years the only source of yoga. Nothing has been added because nothing is needed. It is very rare that one person creates a complete system so complete and so perfect that it is impossible to do anything about it. In the West, it used to be thought that Aristotle was such a person who created logic. The whole system of logic alone, and for 2000 years it has remained the same. But in this century things have changed because new discoveries in physics have made it absolutely necessary to find something better than Aristotle. The new findings in physics have created a trouble. If you follow Aristotle's logic, then you cannot accept those findings. Those findings are against Aristotle's logic. But you cannot deny reality. Reality is reality. You can change the logic, which is man-made, but you cannot change the behavior of electrons It is not in your power. It is existential. So a non-Aristotelian logic has grown up. The second case was geometry. Euclid has reigned for these hundreds of years as a perfect master as far as geometry is concerned. But in this century, that too has got into trouble. Non-Euclidean geometries have evolved. They had to be evolved because of the new discoveries of physics. For example, you have heard that the closest distance between two points makes a straight line. But the discovery of the physicists is that there is no straight line at all. A straight line is impossible. For the simple reason, because you are sitting on a global earth. You can draw a straight line here on the floor, but it is not a straight line because it is part of a circle. If you go on drawing it, both the ends, one day they will meet somewhere and you will see that it has become a circle. So the small piece that you were thinking is a straight line, it was not a straight line, just it was so small that you could not see the curve. The curve was invisible. It was so small, but it was there. Where you are going to draw a straight line? Because all stars, all planets, everything is global. It is round. So wherever you will draw a line, howsoever small it is, looks absolutely straight. Even with scientific instruments, you can see that it is straight. But go on making it bigger and bigger, and it will become a part of a circle. So it was an arc, not a straight line. In the same way, everything from Euclid has been cancelled. Patanjali remains the only person yet, and perhaps may remain the only person who has created a whole science alone and has remained for 5,000 years without any challenge from any corner. He calls it the Turiya, the fourth. He is so scientific a man that one simply feels amazed. 5,000 years before, he had the courage, the insight, the awareness to say that God is only a hypothesis. It can help you to become awakened, but it is not a reality. It is only a device. There is no God to be achieved. It is only a hypothesis. Few people can be helped by the hypothesis. They can use it. But remember, it is not a reality. And once you have become awakened, it disappears. The same way as you, when you wake up, your dreams disappear. Who were so real in your dream that sometimes it happens even after you have awakened, there is some effect left of the reality of the dream. Your heart is beating faster, you are perspiring, trembling, still afraid. Now you know perfectly it was a dream, but you are still crying, your tears are there. The dream was non-existential, but it has affected you, because for that period you had taken it for granted to be real. So it is possible you can see the devotees crying before their God emotionally, very much affected, dancing, singing, worshipping, and feeling the truth of it. But it is just a hypothesis. There is nothing, no God. But these people are taking the hypothesis as reality. One day, when they will be awake, they will laugh at themselves that it was only a hypothesis. But there are other masters who have given different names according to their own philosophical background. Few have called it enlightenment. Bikming, full of light, all darkness disappears, all unconsciousness disappears, becoming fully conscious. There are others who have called it liberation, freedom from yourself. Remember, all other freedoms are political, social. They are freedom from somebody, from some government, from some country, from some political party. But it is always freedom from. Religious freedom is freedom not from somebody else, but from yourself. You are no more. Because you are no more, few masters in the East have called it anatta, no selfness. Buddha had called it nirvana, which is very close to anatta, no selfness. Or selflessness. Just is zero. A profound nothingness surrounding you. But it is not emptiness. It is fullness, fullness of being, of ultimate joy, fullness of being blessed, fullness of blissfulness. All that you have known before is no more there. Hence it is empty of all that. But something new, absolutely new, you had not even dreamt about, is discovered. Some has called it universal existence. But what name you give does not matter. I think the fourth still remains the best, because it does not lead you into mind trips. Otherwise, you are going to think about it, that what is emptiness, what is nothingness, and nothingness can create a fear, emptiness can create a free fear, anatta, no selfness can create a fear. The fourth is absolutely right. Three stages you know. The fourth is just below it. It is not far away. The idea of being lives away from it is a dream. In reality, it is just by the side. Wake up and you are it.
Beloved Bhagwan, I heard you say that enlightenment is the transcendence of mind, conscious, unconscious, subconscious, and that one dissolves into the ocean of life, into the universe, into nothingness. I also hear you talking about the individuality of human beings. How can the individuality of an enlightened person manifest itself if he is dissolved in the whole?
Ordinary, unconscious human being has no individuality. He has only a personality. Personality is that which is given by others to you. By the parents, by the teachers, by the priests, by the society, whatever they have said about you, and you have been desiring to be respectable, to be respected, so you have been doing things which are appreciated. And the society goes on rewarding you, respecting you more and more. This is their method of creating a personality. But personality is very thin, skin deep. It is not your nature. The child is born without a personality. But he is born with a potential individuality. The potential individuality simply means his uniqueness from anybody else. He is different. So first remember that individuality is not personality. When you drop personality, you discover your individuality. And only the individual can become enlightened. The false cannot become the ultimate realization of truth. Only the true can meet with the true. Only the same can meet the same. Your individuality is existential. Hence, when your individuality blossoms, you become one with the whole. Here is the question. You become one with the whole, then how can you remain individual? The problem is simply a non-understanding. The experience of becoming the whole is of consciousness. And the expression of it is through the body, through the mind. The experience is beyond the body-mind structure. When one becomes absolutely silent, goes into samadhi, reaches this, the fourth stage, he is not body, he is not mind, they are all silent, he is far above them. He is pure consciousness. This pure consciousness is universal. Just as this light in all these bulbs is one, but it can be expressed differently. The bulb can be blue, the bulb can be green, the bulb can be red. The shape of the bulb can be different. The body, mind are still there, and if the man of experience wants to express his experience, then he has to use the body mind. There is no other way. And his body mind are unique. Only he has that structure. Nobody else has that structure. So he has experienced the universal, he has become the universal. But to the world, to the others, he is an unique individual. His expression is going to be different from other realized people. It is not that he wants to be different, he has a different mechanism. And he can only come through that mechanism to you. There have been enlightened painters. They have never spoken, because the word was not their art. But they have painted. And their paintings are totally different from ordinary paintings, even of the great masters. Even the greatest master painters are unconscious people. What they paint reflects their unconsciousness. What if a realized man paints, then his painting has a totally different beauty. It is not only a painting, it is a message too. It has a meaning to be discovered. The meaning has been given in a code language because the man was capable only of painting. So his painting is a code language. You have to discover the code and then the painting will reveal immense meanings. The more you go deeper into those meanings, more and more you will find. The other paintings are just flat. They may be made by masters, but they are flat. The paintings made by a realized man are multidimensional. They are not flat. They want to say something to you. If the man is a poet like Kabir, then he sings, and his poetry is his expression. If the man is articulate to speak the unspeakable, then he speaks, but his words will have a totally different impact. The same words are used by everybody, but they don't have that impact because they don't carry the same energy. They don't come from the same source. A man of experience brings his words full of his experience. They are not dry. They are not the words of an orator or a speaker. He may not know the art of speaking, but no orator can do what he can do with words. He can transform people. Just by hearing him, just by being in the presence of him, just by letting his words reign over you, you will feel it. Transformation happening, that a new being is born in you, that you are reborn. So when I say that even enlightened people have individuality, I mean that they remain unique for the simple reason because they have a unique body-mind structure. And anything that has to come to you has to come through that structure. Buddha speaks in one way. Mahavira speaks in another way. Chuang Tzu speaks in absurd stories. He is a great storyteller, but his stories side by side go on playing with your heart. The stories are so absurd that your mind cannot do anything. That's the reason he has chosen the stories to be absurd. So that your mind cannot come in between. By his absurd stories, he stops your mind, and then his presence is available to you and to your heart. You can drink the wine he has brought for you. And he has put your mind away by telling you an absurd story. The mind is puzzled. And is out of function. Many people have wondered why Chuang Tzu writes such absurd stories. And nobody has been able to answer the fact, for the simple reason, because the people who were thinking why he is writing this had no idea that it is a device to make the mind go out of function. And then you are available, fully available from your heart. He can contact you in that way. But Buddha cannot say an absurd story. He uses parables, but they are very meaningful. He does not want to avoid the mind. These are the uniquenesses of the people. He wants the mind to be convinced and then through that conviction of the mind he wants to go to your heart. If mind is convinced, it gives way. And Buddha's parables, his discourses are all logical. The mind has to give way sooner or later. Different masters, for example, Jalaluddin Rumi, does nothing but whirling. He became enlightened for 36 hours continuously whirling, without any stop, non-stop whirling. In fact, every child likes to will. Parents stop him that you will fall, that you may get a fit or you may get hit by something. Don't do such a thing. But all children all over the world love whirling, because somehow while the child is whirling, he finds his center. Without finding the center, you cannot will. So the body goes on whirling, but the whirling has to happen on a center. So slowly, slowly he becomes aware of the center. And 36 hours continuously whirling, Rumi became absolutely clear about his center. That was his experience of the ultimate, the fourth. Then his whole life he was not doing anything but teaching, whirling to people. It will look absurd to a Buddhist to any other religion, because what you can get out of whirling? But it is a simple method, the simplest method. But it may suit you or it may not. For example, for me it cannot suit. I cannot sit on a swing. That is enough to create nausea in me. What to say about sitting myself on a swing? I cannot see somebody else swinging. That is enough to give me a feeling of nausea. Now, Rumi is not for me. And there may be many people to whom whirling will give nausea, vomiting. That means it is not for them. We are individually different. And there is no contradiction. One can experience the universal and yet when the question of expression arises, he has to be individual.
Beloved Bhagwan, the other morning I heard you saying that the so-called self is just an idea of the mind, because it seems hard for the mind to accept that our being is just pure nothingness, surprisingly containing the whole. Then who and what is the witness you talk about so much? Is it a masterly device which has to be dropped at some point?
It is. Everything is a device, because the truth cannot be said. So only devices can be given. And you have to be convinced about devices. But they will have to be dropped at the last moment. But that does not mean that you have to drop them now. Dropping them now will not help. Now you have to use them to their utmost possibility. And then that moment will come by itself when the device has reached to the peak. It disappears and you are in the experience of the fourth. The whole problem is because the truth cannot be said. So something has to be devised which will bring you to truth. And the device has to be such that it will not become an obstruction in itself. So the great master is one who gives you a device which is made in such a way that it is going to disappear automatically, autonomously, the moment you come close to truth. There are many devices which are good but dangerous, because they can become obstacles. For example, I told you, Patanjali says God is a device. Nobody before him or after him has ever said that. There have been people who said God is a truth, and there have been people who have said there is no God. But Patanjali's attitude is totally different from both. He is not a theist, he is not an atheist. He is simply a scientific mind. He says God is a hypothesis. The fight of its existence or non-existence is baseless. You don't fight about any other hypothesis. But it is a dangerous hypothesis. Even in the life of a man like Ramakrishna, it became an obstacle. So the device is not going to leave you automatically at the right moment. It is dangerous. It will cling. It will obstruct your vision. It will take you to the final step, but it won't allow you to take it. A great attachment with the device itself would become the barrier. Ramakrishna was the devotee of Mother Goddess Kali, and not an ordinary devotee, not a formal. He really loved sometimes in the temple. From the morning till evening, he will go on dancing and singing. And sometimes he will lock the temple for days together and won't even go in it. It was reported because the temple belonged to a very rich woman, Rani Rasmani. He was a paid servant. He was the priest, and this is not right, that for few days the temple does not even open. Other devotees come and have to go back because Ramakrishna is not in the mood to open the doors. And sometimes Ramakrishna is so much in the mood that the devotees get tired. Because when you go into a temple, you wait for prasad, the food that is offered to the god has to be distributed to all the worshippers who are there. And it is thought to be, prasad means grace, that it is God's grace and His gift. So people wait for it, but how long they can wait? This man goes on dancing, singing from morning till evening. Worshippers have come and gone. The prasad can be distributed only when the priest has stopped worshipping. And priests are all paid, so they are always in a hurry. In fact, one priest goes to many temples, so he can get salaries from many temples. So he is in such a hurry that he does as short a worship as possible or acceptable, and immediately distributes the prasad and runs to another temple. And there are so many temples in India that a priest can manage 5 temples, 6 temples very easily. But Ramakrishna was not such a priest. He was really a lover. To him, the goddess was not just a statue, and the worship was not just a ritual. It has a reality, not a dream. The queen Rasmani called him and asked him, "What is the matter? I have been hearing different kinds of complaints about you. One, sometimes you worship the whole day. In what scripture it is written?" Ramakrishna said, "I don't know any scripture." And I had made it clear even before you implored me that I am uneducated. I don't know any scripture. I know only simply devotional songs. So I sing. And to me it is not a question of worshipping in a certain time. Time disappears. I don't have any idea. Once I am in it, I don't know when the morning has become evening. So if you don't want me, I can leave. But I am going to be this way." The queen said, "This is not the only complaint, because this can be allowed. The whole day worship, there is no harm. But sometimes you don't open the doors of the temple." He said, "That's true. Sometimes I get angry at the goddess. I love her. But she does not listen to me. And once in a while, after all, I am a human being, I get cross. So I say, okay, now remain closed for 2-3 days. That will bring you to your senses. No food, no worship. But if you have any trouble, I can leave." The Rani could not say to him to leave, because the man was so beautiful and so authentic. And what he was saying has a beauty of its own. Even not opening the doors was a love affair. Just the quarrel of lovers. The Rani said, "Even that can be allowed, because I want you to be here. But one thing is very bad, that I hear that before offering the food to the goddess, You taste every sweet yourself. He said, that's true. Because my mother used to make these sweets, and Bengal makes the best sweets in India. She would make them and then she will taste them. If they were really good, then she would give to me, give to my father, otherwise not. She will make again. My wife prepares the sweets. She prevents me that this is not right. First, they have to be offered to the God and then they can be distributed. But I cannot offer anything which is tasteless or is not made good. I have to taste them first. If you don't want it, I'm ready to go. But I will continue the same way. The man was very simple. And what he was saying was a beautiful thing. He cannot offer to the goddess something that may not be the best. Only the best should be offered. But how to find it out? One has to taste it. He worshipped in Dakshineshwar near Calcutta his whole life. And at the end of his life, just few years before he died, he told one morning that now the doctors are saying that I have cancer of the throat. It is not growing, but it can start growing any moment. And before I die, I want to experience the truth. I am ready and I will do everything. I will dance today before you, sing before you, and in every temple of Mother Kali there is always hanging a big sword. As in the past, that sword was used, and it is still used in the main temple of Calcutta to cut the heads of animals as sacrifice. Ramakrishna was not doing that, but the sword has become part of the temple. He said, if by the evening I don't have the experience, I will take the sword and kill myself. The responsibility will be yours. Few worshippers were there, they rushed out, told everybody that madman is going to do something. Now this is too much. All that he has been doing was okay, but now he is going to kill himself. A great crowd assembled in the temple, and Ramakrishna danced madly, sang madly for the whole day. And as the sun was setting, he pulled the sword and said to the goddess, so I am going to cut my head as a sacrifice to you. Either the experience or the head will be in your feet. And he was going to hit the sword. The sword fell from his hands and he fell down on the floor and remained for 6 hours to the outside world unconscious, but to his own experience in samadhi. In a beautiful state, utterly silent and blissful. And after 6 hours, when he woke up with tears and he said, why you have woken me up? You should have left me in the same state. Just few days afterwards, there was a master passing by who heard about Ramakrishna, that he had a 6-hour samadhi. The master came. Ramakrishna was very humble man. He touched the feet of the master and said, help me, because I attained that experience, but it was only for 6 hours. Then I am back to my old stage. The master said, you don't understand. It was not a real experience. You forced that experience upon yourself by your stubbornness, because you were going to kill yourself. After dancing the whole day and singing, your mind simply stopped seeing the situation that the man is going to kill himself. It has nothing to do with Kali or anybody. It was simply the stopping of the mind. And that experience was only an experience when mind is not chattering and you feel immense silence and beauty and joy. If you really want the ultimate experience, the fourth, then you will have to do one thing very hard, and that is to cut all attachment with Mother Goddess. That is your problem. You have passed all other barriers, but now this last barrier is the most difficult, because you have staked everything on her. So do as I say. You sit in meditation, close your eyes, and when you see the Mother Kali arising near your third eye, which is going to happen, he said, yes, it happens whenever I close my eyes. She is there. So he said, that's good. Just that is the moment. This time you are not to cut your head. Take the sword and cut in two pieces the Mother Goddess. Ramakrishna said, my God, that is very difficult. I cannot hurt her. And you are talking me to kill her. But the man said, unless you do it, you will never attain. You try it and see. He will close his eyes, tears will flow from his eyes, and there was great joy on his face and radiance, and he will open his eyes and the master will ask, and he will say, yes, I saw her, but I have forgot all about killing her. She is so beautiful. And the attachment is so long as I can remember. He was very small when he became the priest. Two, three times he tried. The master said that this is the last time. If you cannot do it, then I will do it. I have brought this piece of glass. When I see that tears have started flowing from your eyes, I will know that you are seeing Mother Goddess. I will cut with the sharp piece of glass on your forehead to remind you that this is the time. Do the same. Cut her in two pieces. It is just your idea. There is nobody else. It is only an hypothesis. And the master had to cut on his forehead, and the mark remained his whole life. because blood started flowing over his face. But deep inside he managed courage and cut the mother goddess in two pieces. And as he fell in two pieces, as if a door opened, and the whole universe was his. It took 6 days for him to come back. When he came back, the first words that he uttered are immensely important. He said, "The last barrier has fallen." Any device that can become a barrier to, it may help you to get rid of other things, but finally you have to get rid of it. And that may be a difficult thing. It was so difficult for Ramakrishna. And that was the last day. Never again he went into the temple. He lived 3-4 years. He simply forgot all about Kali. But there are devices which will not create such a trouble. And there are devices which will fall automatically. The moment when you are reaching to the climax of your being, they will simply fall down. And I call the Master, the great Master, the perfect Master, who creates devices which are going to fall down on their own accord, when the moment has come for the person to experience the ultimate. Other devices are created by smaller people, perhaps they don't know that these devices can become attachments themselves. So everything I say is a device. My speaking to you is a device, so that you can just be here. Your mind engaged listening to me, and something invisible can go on transpiring between me and your hearts. That's the real thing. The words will help the mind to remain engaged. They are like just toys. You don't want children to disturb you. You are studying and you give them toys. And they go on and start playing with toys. So you can do your work or study or anything that you want to do. And the children won't come to bother you and ask you questions and this and that. The mind is just like a child. The words are just toys for the mind, not truths. But simply toys. But while mind is engaged, something can happen from my depth to your depth. You may not understand it, but it will start having changes in you, transformations in your being. Sometimes simply sitting silently with me, but then there's always the problem, your mind will disturb you. I have tried it, to sit in silence with you. And I have seen that the problem is I can reach to your heart less. Your mind is too much disturbing you. Speaking seems to be a better device. Your mind remains engaged. And once in a while, if I give a gap between two words, the mind does not disturb. The mind simply looks and waits what is going to happen, what is going to be said. And meanwhile, the real work is happening. The real work is from my heart to your heart.